Now, the title of the seminar here, of course, is Achieving Success in a Changing World. Now, the word success here, I use it in the sense of both monetary and mental contentment, you see. So the thought is, the intent of this portion is how to avoid those legal impacts that are going to adversely affect you monetarily or from a peace of mind standpoint. And therefore, you can achieve this success in a changing world by avoiding these problems. Now, the things I'm going to bring up here are not just a lot of points I sat down and thought, well, listen, I want to talk about something. What can I talk about? No, these are points that have been reoccurring, let's say, during my entire time of practicing law, which is about 25 years now. These are the points that come up over and over and over again. So I take these, I pull them together, and I want to go ahead and present them to you now so that you'll have them in mind and you'll be able to capitalize on the experience of hundreds of other people and thereby avoid these pitfalls and these problems so that you will not have to incur them and incur them and will then be able to, let's say, have this success as we're talking about. Now, one of the title for this section. So I had to think about it, and here we're talking about mangled bodies, we're going to talk about accidents, we're going to talk about being arrested, and least gruesome of all, probably just dying outright, you see. So I'm going to title this The Legal Happy Hour. That'll be the title. Now, the first thing I want to go into are consumer problems. Now, with consumer problems, you may not incur the greatest debt or the greatest problem in life, but they are ones that are most occurring. The ones that the chances of happening to you are most likely. Now, let's just suppose you're sitting home. You're happy. You're content. You feel your house is adequate. You feel it's a credit to the neighborhood. You feel a knock on the door, and there comes a salesman. And before you know it, he's got you convinced you got the crummiest house on the block. It's a disgrace to the block. It needs siding. It needs roofing. So you tell him, fine, go ahead, let's get some siding on. And you go out and look at it, and here you find you got gray siding on one side, blue siding on the other, and a different kind in front. See, these are some problems that occur, not quite that drastic, but something like that. Or a salesman knocks on the door, and you find that he convinces you that you need your driveway paved. So you go out there, and you look when the job is done, you find they not only paved the driveway, but the grass and front porch as well, you see. Okay, these are some problems. Or you get a knock on the door. Pretty soon you're sold on the idea that you need 150 dance lessons. You're going to have to dance like Arthur Murray. When you get done with the course, you find all you got is bunions, you see. And these things go on and on. Or there's the usual health spa deal. Come down, we're going to make a new man out of you. You're going to be Charles Atlas. And when you get done, the only thing you find is that you just got a heavier debt. See what I mean? And things like this, they say, occur, and they go on continuously. Now, one of the big ones, too, is home improvement. They want to come in. Look, you need this. You need a kitchen. You need something else. You want to improve it, hang cabinets. And I'll tell you one case that happened. A fellow comes in. The man wanted to go ahead and remodel his kitchen. Wife says, oh, boy, I really want that done. Okay, the guy looks it over. Knocks out the entire outside wall, mind you. The whole outside wall in order to remodel the kitchen. Puts a plastic sheet up, doesn't come back. Doesn't come back. Weeks go by. Months go by. You can imagine the wife. Every day she comes down, you know, big sheet of plastic there, wind blowing in. See, dirt and dust, everything else. Okay, what do you do in cases like this? That's what I want to cover today to try to help you out here. Now, first of all, when these problems occur, if the amount is a large amount involved, don't fool with it yourself. Don't start writing letters. Don't start saying a lot of things, but get counsel. Get an attorney if a large amount is involved, because there are so many technicalities in cases, you never know what you're going to write or what you're going to say may kill your case. So if it's a large amount. Now, if it's not, you know, a massive amount, first of all, go to the person themselves. Down at the store, wherever it is, used car salesman, talk to them. Discuss it. You may find that they're very friendly, very responsible. They say, boy, we're sorry, and they rectify it. So your problem solved. On the other hand, don't be discouraged. Don't call. Talk to Joe Schlunk that gets the first person on the phone. Have him tell you to go jump in a lake. and then start the other things we're talking about. No, try to go up to a higher step. Pardon me, you'll find in doing so, maybe in a higher level, you're going to find somebody just to resolve it for you. Then, if you find that proper discussion does not carry the day, you've got to start threatening. Now, by threatening, I don't mean you're going to punch the guy in the nose. I mean threatening with some of the things we're going to talk about. Do it politely. But on the other hand, don't be a mouse. These are some very practical pointers. Don't be a Mr. Milquetoast. Go down there and you'll find that sometime after you discussed it nicely, if you have a little bit of raise in the voice, a little bit, boy, I'm going to do these things here, you may get results at that point. If they feel you're weak, they're going to run right over you. Now, the first thing that you can, let's say, threaten or mention you're going to do is that, look, now, if you do not settle this matter up, I am going to go down to the Consumer Affairs or the Consumer Protection Division. Now, they won't sue for your money here in Texas. But believe me, they have a very strong consumer protection law in Texas. I don't want to read everything here. It's too long. I go through this with each state that I lecture in. But here, they've got one whereby, first of all, they certain remedies they have. They can go in for a restraining order. Now, again, this is not directly going to put the money back in your pocket. But you see, with this threat, and they're going to know what the state can do to them, you're going to have a big club that you can use. Now, the state can go in and get an injunction. That means you stop doing the wrong that you're doing, Mr. Seller. Now, they can get an injunction and a penalty of $2,000 per violation, up to $10,000. Now, you see, it's not hard to get to 10 when you say per violation. Because let's say if you're making something, if they were making something they weren't supposed to be making, they'd be making 100, 2,000 of them. So it's easily going to get up to 10. Then if the injunction is entered and they violate that injunction, and you see, that may be your case. They may have already had some kind of a complaint against them, and yours may be the violation where they were told not to do it and they did it. They can get up to a $10,000 penalty, a maximum of $50,000. So you see, you're talking big money. And that man, when he starts to hear that name and what you're going to do, and you sound sincere in it, he's going to say, look, let's get rid of this guy or this gal. You see that? Now, you can also go in to court and file suit. And if you do, there's many remedies you can have, but here's one of them. 3 times the amount of actual damages, plus court costs, plus attorney's fees. That's some of the things that can happen. And this is all for what they call false, misleading, or deceptive practices. Now, they've got a word in there, too, or an unconscionable course of conduct, meaning something that's just... it just doesn't smack right, you see. It's a little wrong, or greatly wrong, I should say. And if you can go down there and you can convince the man you're going to go, and especially if he had 10 other people, and they've gone down there, he's going to say, we better settle up with this fellow right now before they really, you know, click the switch down there. I'll give you specifics on that because that's going to be one of your biggest clubs to get the thing resolved. Now, if they won't do that, then say, and here's something else I'm going to do. I'm going to go down to the police department. Now, don't accuse them of stealing from you so that you get some kind of a lawsuit here for libel and slander, but just say, I'm going to take the facts down there. I'm going to go down to what they call the bunco squad, and I'm going to just give them the facts. So if there's any wrong that's been done here, any violation, they're going to pick it up, and they're going to be knocking on your door. Next, if you've dealt with somebody who has a license, like let's say a contractor, a real estate broker, or a collection agency. See, they are usually licensed by the state. So you tell them, look, you've done a wrong here. I'm also going to go down to the licensing board. And, of course, if they've done a wrong there, they'll get their license revoked. Their license is their bread and butter. And, of course, that's going to be a very big thing to them. Now, don't sit back and say, oh, well, you know, it's not going to help here. It's not, I don't think they're going to do anything. You don't know what kind of a responsive cord you're going to find. I just had a case that came in the office here last week in which a insurance agent that I know was sued for $10 million by an attorney. He was sued. He sued the insurance company and also a bunch of adjusters and everybody else because he didn't settle a claim that his client had. Now, he may have had a case against the insurance company. He may have a case against the adjuster. But he certainly doesn't have it against my client, the insurance broker. They've done nothing wrong. All they do is pass the claim off. So here's a $10 million lawsuit. Now, he could go to his insurance carrier and say, look, you represent me in any liability cases. Here's a case where I've been sued on. But the point is that would kick up his premiums. It'd get very, very expensive for him. So how did we approach that? Now, I suppose I could have sat down and said, well, boy, there's no way, just take it there. You know, if a guy sues for $10 million, you're talking about a pretty big case. I says, no, let me call the attorney. I called the attorney. I said, look, let me tell you something. Here's what I want. I want you to dismiss my client. Yeah, he kind of giggled. You know, dismiss him on a $10 million lawsuit? I said, that's right. I want to give you a little clue. You know, I said, I was just up in Alaska on a case, and he just came down with the very first successful case in which a doctor sued a lawyer, because when the lawyer filed suit, he didn't have proper grounds to do so. I said, I want to tell you now that these men are thinking about doing that. And as you know, my client has no place in this lawsuit. And he's going to be a big one. When the court hears this, you know, you could really have a countersuit here that you're really going to have to fight. I says, now, between attorney and attorney, you don't want that. See, he didn't laugh at this point, see. He said, well, I don't think they can do it. I says, you know, I tell you what's going to happen. All I want to do is tell you. I'm not going to argue the case on the phone. I said, I'd like to get my client dismissed. It ended up, had the client go down. I gave him an affidavit of facts, and the client got dismissed. Out of a $10 million lawsuit, just by following a practical approach. So don't feel the things I've just told you here, you know, nothing's going to happen. You don't know what this guy's got in his mind, and he may get very frightened, and that may be the key to settling up. Now, the next thing you can threaten is, look, if you don't do this, I'm going to go down to the small claims court and file suit. There you can go down, you can file, you represent yourself, and if you do that, you've got a very good chance of winning in a small claims court because the judges have a certain amount of compassion. Ordinarily, neither side can have an attorney represent them, so you got a good shot at winning. Now, if he says, no, I'm still not going to do it, carry the things out. Carry out every one of these, and you can just cause such a harassment that the man's going to come up and you're going to settle your consumer case, chances are. Okay, even the better step is how to avoid it. How do you avoid these problems? Once you're in, that's the way to get out. But how do you even avoid, you know, having the problem in the first instance? The first thing is, any time you're going to go out and you're going to purchase something, you're going to buy something, sleep on it. Or the man knocks on the door. If it's anything of any substance where you're going to put out money or a large amount of credit, sleep on it. You'll find that basically, when a salesman knocks on the door especially, if you sleep on it, you will not buy that product the next day. That's just the absolute fact. That is why they want to close that sale right at the time, you see. I'll never forget when I first got out of law school, up comes this salesman. He's going to sell me a great big set of books on philosophy. So I sat and listened to him. I guess he thought he wanted to cover my wall with him or something. I sat and listened to him for a long period of time and felt. I thought, no, you know, I really don't want this thing. But I guess he really felt he had a sale at that point. So he tells me, you think you ought to buy these? I said, no, I think I'll just wait. He said, look, I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't buy them, that's it. You don't have a chance. See, this is it. This is the last chance. If you don't buy them at this point, you'll never be able to buy them again. I said, well, it just looks as though I'm going to have to lose the sale then, you see, or the purchase. And that's what you've got to do. You've got to learn how to sleep on it and say no to a salesman. Now, also, best way to avoid these problems is to obtain a written estimate. Don't just go on a verbal say-so that this product is going to cost you so much, this service. I will do this job for you for X amount of dollars. And then when you find when it's all done, it costs twice as much. Obtain a written estimate. That's going to be one way to avoid the problem. Not only obtain one, obtain two or three. And that way you're going to find basically what the market value is and whether or not somebody is way high or way low. Now, check with the Better Business Bureau. They have these agencies around. Do this before the problem. Every time somebody has a problem, they say, boy, I'm going to go down to the Better Business Bureau. That's one thing you want to tell them. But the point is you want to check ahead of time. See, once you check ahead of time and you find the guy's got 15 complaints, you see, then wisdom tells you, look, I'm not going to go ahead and deal with this fellow. Because what he's did to others, he's going to do to me. So do that as a practical point. And again, only deal with a reputable company. Don't deal with every fly-by-night organization that comes by. I know in Pasadena there, quite a with certain corporate clients I represent, older people call, they go in, they get these hearing aids, they just get fleeced on them many times. The fellow's got signs in the window, doctor thus and such. What he was a doctor of philosophy, not a medical doctor, see? But the people go in, they sell them very expensive hearing aids. They don't work, they come back, they give them some kind of an exchange, charge them more for the next better one. They give them some kind of a, you know, a useless test. And all they've got is a vacant lease, or a lease on a vacant room, a sign in the front window. So they prey upon as many people as they can, and then they just pack up, put the sign in their briefcase, and they're gone. So deal with a reputable company. Don't just, again, don't, any man can go out, he can swing a hammer, like I used to do when I worked on construction back in Chicago before I went to law school. You go, you take a test, they call you a contractor. There's a big difference between a carpenter and a contractor. You want to find one, if you're going to have some building done, some remodeling, somebody that's been in business. Now, this is not being disparaging of carpenters. As I say, I used to be one. But the point is that when you come to a full contracting job, you know, it takes more knowledge. So again, don't just pick the cheaper price. Price is not the total criteria. In fact, if one fellow is, let's say, way under the price, you've got to be suspicious. Don't necessarily condemn the guy that's higher and say, he's cheating me. You better say, maybe the other guy's a rookie. Or maybe he's going to put the studs in rather than 16 inches on center, maybe 40 inches on center or something else, you see. Maybe the one contractor is thinking about putting in 4-inch insulation, whereas the other fellow's not going to put in insulation at all. So don't just deal with price, but deal with a reputable company. Next, read your agreement. Read your agreement. Don't sign what you don't understand. If there's a lot of words in there you don't understand, say, look, I'm going to have to think about this thing. I'm going to have to talk to somebody to find out what this means. So don't sign what you don't understand. Read it. If you see 3 or 4 pages, say, look, I've got to have time to take this and read it. You cannot possibly sit down, take some of these fine print contracts, you know, you can hardly read, and then read through them on the spot and sign them. There's just not enough time to do it. So don't be pressured. It's a big factor the salesmen work on to pressure you into it, to make you feel embarrassed. And always remember, when they come up with these statements and they say, you say, well, look, it says in here that if I don't pay, you're going to have a lien upon my wife, my kids, the house, my bank account, and everything I got, you see. And then when they say, oh, yes, but that doesn't mean what it says. Then what you want to do, you want to take your pen and you want to scratch it out. See, just right on the spot. Just take it, scratch it out. Hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? Well, if it doesn't mean what it says, let's scratch it out and write what it does mean. See? I mean, you got to do it. Or the next famous statement is, that doesn't mean anything. It says, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. Let's get it out of there. See? Don't leave it in the agreement. But it's surprising how many times people will come in and they say, boy, listen, this guy really cheated me. He got me down here. I'm going to pay, he's trying to charge me, let's say, $500 a month payments on this. I look at the agreement. I said, well, that's what it says. It says $500 a month. Yeah, but he told me it didn't mean that. See? So don't be taken in by these things. I mean, these are reoccurring problems, you see. You can think as well as the other person. Don't just kind of feel as though, oh, well, he's got the upper edge. He knows all these things. It's just a matter of reading. And if it says you have to pay the first of the month, don't let him tell you you pay the 15th. And if he tells you you only pay $10 a month and the agreement says 50, you see, you're going to pay 50. And if he tells you these magazines will come within 1 month and the agreement says they're not going to come for 6 months or your chairs or your furniture, whatever it is, that's what you're signing. So again, it does mean what it says. And if it's in there, it does mean something. So just remember that. Again, all the promises should be included. If he is promising you this or promising you that or promising you heaven and earth, put it in the agreement. You will find in virtually every printed agreement that down at the end, you'll find the statement, which is like a rule of evidence, that this contract is a total contract. It's a complete contract. There are no promises, representations orally made. There's none made that are relied upon. If there are any, they're all incorporated in this written document. You're going to find that clause in every contract, because every company wants to protect themselves from the zealous salesmen that they retain. So if there's a promise and it's important to you, put it in. And don't tell me how honest the salesman is and how good he is and how much he likes you, because he may be gone tomorrow and you're going to be dealing with just the company. Oh, again, line in all the blank spaces. If there are blank spaces, there's nothing in there, put a line through it. Put a line through it. I tell you, this idea of salesmen walking out and sometimes even signing your name, filling in the blanks for something totally contrary to what you were told, is not, unimaginable. Again, it happens. It happens frequently. So make certain any blank spaces, got a line through them. I had a laugh even at my own precaution. I don't know why here, but some time back, some fellow, he came up to see me, and he said, you know, he says, I came up after a lecture here a long time ago, he says, and I got your autograph. I said, oh, is that right? I said, I can't even remember that. He said, yes, yeah, it was very funny, because you just signed the paper up on top, and then you drew a line down below, so nothing could be filled in. So that's how it should be on your mind, so you do it, you don't even think about it, you see. Now, again, when they talk about guarantee, that is one of the biggest things, you know, guarantee. It's guaranteed. Guaranteed. I always hear that. What guaranteed product? The question is, guaranteed against what? What does the guarantee say? How long does the guarantee run, you see? I can say this pen is guaranteed, right? But guaranteed against what? Well, if you read the fine print, it may say it's guaranteed to the extent that if it's trampled on by a herd of elephants in the Nairobi desert, we will go ahead and replace it at $150 cost for handling thing. So that's what I mean. You've got to read the guarantee. The word guarantee doesn't mean anything. It's all those little tiny words underneath that have meaning that you got to get an extra pair of glasses on to read thing. They've started something new now. Now they're not only making the print small, but they're making it faded. If you ever look at back at some of these rental car company lease agreements, you can't even read it in one I got. It's very faded. You see, they print it in faded ink. So these are some of the tricks they use just to have you sign. But again, don't give up on these things. Because we had one girl, she got hit in a car with a lease car, and they wanted to sue her for the damages. But she wasn't at fault. Somebody hit her. But in one part of the agreement, it said, we don't care who's at fault. If our car is damaged when you bring it back, we're going to collect from you. Well, in going through it very carefully, all that fine print, I know what happens. You see, some of these companies, you get all this fine print. Somebody says, hey, this is worded kind of funny here. So they change that. Somebody else says, I got an idea. So they add a paragraph down here. Somebody says, hey, remember that problem we had? They add a paragraph back here. You see, but nobody sits down and thinks the agreement through in its entirety. You see that? So you get these five or six changes, and many times they're repugnant. So in her case, I just looked at this and said, yeah, you're pointing to this section, but how about this section over here? It's repugnant to this one. And how about this down here? It's repugnant to something else, you say. This is your agreement. You drafted it under the law. It's construed most strongly against you. So you better let this girl off the hook and quit harassing her, because she's getting nervous, she's getting upset, and if you keep it up, I'm going to file suit for emotional distress. So the case was settled. Okay. So I'm saying, don't just belly up on some of these things. Now, another consumer problem that comes up is the co-signing of a note. Now, what is co-signing? You know, that's when somebody says, look, I want to borrow some money down here. They won't give it to me. They want me to get a co-sign. They want you to sign. Now, what are you saying when you do that? What you're saying, in effect, is that if this guy doesn't pay you, bank or credit company, I will pay you. And let me tell you, if you co-sign, the chances are you are going to pay. It just happens inevitably. especially, you know, with the guy at the shop. You're a good friend of his. You sign the note to get his car. He says, thanks, I wanted that car because I'm going to Florida. See? And he's gone. He may make the payments for a month, then pretty soon he's really got a hard luck story. I mean, he may be honest, but he just can't make them. You see? Then you're going to have to pick up the tab. So the first thing you want to think about, now look, John, what do you want this money for? Say, well, I'll tell you, there's a beautiful Cadillac over there. I've always wanted a Cadillac, and I'm going to buy that Cadillac. You know, you ought to think, now wait a minute, I got a 68 Plymouth, right? And I'm going to put my credit out so his guy can get a Cadillac. I don't have a Cadillac. So even that should tell you, no, John, no. If I'm going to put my credit, I'm going to go out and buy a Cadillac. You see? So I just can't sign for you. Now, again, you want to think, now, wait a minute. He's gone down to the Bucket of Bud borrowing agency over there, right? He wanted to borrow money. Or he's gone to the bank over there to borrow money. And these guys are professionals, and they won't lend them. They won't give them the money. They say, I'm sorry, but your credit is not good enough, Mr. Borrower. You better go out and get somebody to sign because we don't trust you. That's what the professionals are telling him. So he's coming to you and say, look, would you sign for me, right, so I can get the money? So what he's telling you, look, would you please be a little bit dumber than they are, right? That's what he's telling you. He's telling you to your face without using those words. So again, I'm just giving you some little backup so you don't kind of get, you know, well, okay, then you sign it, you see. Just think about that. What you're in effect doing, you're in effect loaning him the money. Now, here's the only time, actually, that I would ever go ahead and co-sign for somebody. That would be, first of all, do you have enough money that you would give it to him? Do you have enough money? And are the circumstances such, and he is a person that's so related to you in some way, that you would give it to him for this particular project? Now, if you can afford it and you would give him the money, then there's no problem in co-signing. Because all he can do then, when he doesn't pay, you could go ahead and pay the bank, you see. Now, if you don't have those circumstances existing, don't co-sign, because the chances are you're going to end up paying. Again, if you are going to sign, you want to keep in mind that this is going to be a lien. They're probably going to record this. So if you want to go out and borrow money, you're going to have a hard time doing so because you have this prior lien on certain property of yours, you see. Now, let's move to a little different subject, and that's insurance. Now, we had you sitting home, first of all. Now, let's have you leaving. So, if you're going to leave, here's one thing you got to think of. As I say, when it comes up to the consumer problems, they may occur more often, but you know, usually don't get hit too heavy. Excuse me. But now we're going to talk about insurance, and these are cases that may not come up as often, but when they do, they're really a financial wipeout. Now, let's talk first of all about automobile insurance. Now, don't drive without insurance. I'll say virtually every state has laws to this effect, that if you drive without insurance and you're involved in an accident, even where you are not at fault, mind you, even where you are not at fault, they will take away your driver's license and take away the license on the car until such time as the case or claim against you is resolved. Now, this is a lever that some people use. Even though they say you're not at fault, they say, look, buddy, you hit me. I know you don't have insurance, and I'm going to go ahead, and I'm not going to give a release to the Secretary of State, and your license is going to be wiped out. So therefore, you better give me a few bucks. Now, that's if it's minimal. We got one case where some fellow in another state driving a truck, he needed to drive a truck for a living. He hit somebody. They ran out on the road. It really wasn't his fault. The person got an attorney, and the state came in because he didn't have insurance. They revoked his license on the truck. They revoked his driver's license. So here, virtually, he's out of business. So you see the effect it could have? Just to get in your car and go someplace rather than take a bus, if you drive without insurance, you could be wiped out that way. Not to even mention about somebody where you are at fault and somebody sues you for $100,000 because they have a broken leg or something. They get a judgment against you. And you see, this rule, it's strange how rumors get started from a legal standpoint, you know, from the barber attorney or the bartender attorney, that don't worry about that, let them sue you, let them get a judgment against you, because you could just pay the guy a dollar a month and he can't do anything. That's not true, see. That's simply not true. If somebody gets a judgment against you, they have means of executing on that judgment. Either, let's say, if you have a home, of coming in and attaching it and having it sold, where the state comes down and they sell it to the highest bidder. Money comes in, it goes to him first. Or if you have a mortgage, let's say to the mortgagee first. Or if you have a job, they can do what they say, grab your wages, you see, on a garnishment. Or if you have a bank account. Now, there are some limitations on these things. There are some limitations. The laws say sometimes you can only take so much of the home. You got to be a certain value. They say certain bank accounts up to a certain amount are exempted. Certain wages are exempted. But basically speaking, this is what they can do. So don't just feel, that's okay, you know, I'll just go ahead and leave them, get a judgment, I'll still drive without insurance. No, don't feel that way, because they can go ahead and enforce it. Now, you got to make sure each car is insured. This is something that many times where people want to be careful, but they have one car, let's say they go out and buy another one, and they drive that, and then somebody in the family takes out the other car, and bang, there's an accident. Say, I'm sorry, when you got the one car, your insurance didn't cover your second car. As a consequence, that car wasn't covered. So be careful of that. Now, you also have to make sure each person is insured. A mistake some people make, they go out, they buy insurance, and they let their son drive the car or their daughter. Then they find that the person was too young. And you look at the fine print of the policy, it says this policy does not cover anybody under 21 years of age that drives with your consent. So you let your kid go out and drive, you get in an accident, and they come back, and even though they will revoke his driver's license, they will revoke the car license of your car, you see, for one thing. So make sure each person is covered. Now, you're close here to Mexico. Now, I'll tell you, one thing you want to make certain if you're going to drive in Mexico is that your insurance covers you in Mexico. I have a special little card where I get special insurance before I go down. Now, they are very strict. Don't just take the broker's word. Call the broker. Do I have it? Yes. Mail me a letter to that effect, will you please, to make sure you got the follow-up. Because if you go down there, you get in an accident, he's going to forget he ever told you, you see. He's going to forget very conveniently. He's going to forget about it. So get it in writing. Make sure you're covered. Secondly, make sure you're covered as far as you're going to go. Some insurance, they say, sure, you've got insurance in Mexico, but it only covers for 30 miles or 10 miles or 15 miles. It doesn't cover you maybe as far as you're going to go into Mexico. Now, I really say that because if you get down there and you get in an accident, you see, they're going to impound your car. They're going to grab the car, and they're going to put you in the slammer, you know, in the tank, right? Now, and they put you in there, and it's not like here, you see. There they put you in, and they'll take you out next week, and they'll talk to you and say, well, you know, what happened, and they'll put you back again, may call you out 2 weeks later to talk to you some more, see, and all of it's in Spanish. And as you're sitting in there, you're going to find that you got a little pot in the corner, and that's it, in a plain cell. So, I mean, it is really a gruesome result down there. So I want to say, if you're going to Mexico, you know, think twice, or use your head and take a bus across. Now, another factor that comes up, it's good to have, and it's uninsured motorist coverage. Uninsured motorist coverage. What is that? That's your going down the street, right? You're not at fault. Somebody comes and they plow into you. Okay? Let's say you have serious injuries, two broken legs, the car damage. You know, you're off of work for a couple of months, whatever it takes. And, you know, it's a very short while before medical bills today run up into thousands of dollars. Okay, you got a perfect case. The guy went to a red light. You've got witnesses. He was drunk. He was speeding. But he doesn't have any insurance. So what do? You see, you're out. That loss is going to be on your back. And you say it could be catastrophic for you. It'd be a total economic wipeout. But to cover against that, you can buy, and it's only a few dollars. That's the big thing. It's only a few bucks to have what you call uninsured motorist coverage. So when that man is not insured in that case, then you can sue your own insurance company. You see that? If you have $100,000 loss, you can come to the insurance company and say, look, I have $100,000 loss, pay me, and then you worry about trying to collect from the guy that wasn't insured. So that's a worthwhile thing to have to avoid this adverse impact that we're talking about. Again, make sure you have adequate insurance. We just had a case, again, where somebody got hit, serious injuries. They were at fault, but the passenger had a right to claim, and the woman happened to be seriously injured. And you see, there was only $30,000 insurance. It wasn't enough to pay the other fellows that were in the accident and to pay his passenger as well. Pardon me. And when it comes down to it, again, you're going to find that the difference between $30,000 insurance and, let's say, $50,000 or $100,000, you're only talking sometimes $5 or $10 difference to protect you. So especially if you got a home and you got assets, look at your policy to see if you had enough. Now, beware also of the salesman that says you're insured, you're covered. So many times an accident occurs. How long have you had the car? Well, I just got it, 6 months ago. Are you insured? Yes. Are you sure you're insured? Yes. How do you know? The salesman said so. I said, uh-oh, bring in the policy. It happens many, many times that the insurance coverage only protects the car. That's all they were concerned about. Sure, you're covered. You're covered so that when they damage our car that you owe us money on, we're going to collect, you see. But when a guy sues for the $100,000 for his two broken legs, you're not covered at all. They didn't buy a dime worth of that insurance for you. They just covered themselves and their car. So beware of that statement. Again, you say, well, look, I can't afford insurance. Then I submit to you, can you afford to drive? Keep that in mind because the impacts are very heavy. Another type of insurance that's worthwhile having if you own a home and it's not absolutely necessary, but it can prove worthwhile, that is homeowner's insurance. That's in case somebody slips and falls, when it snows out or it rains and you didn't clean your sidewalk properly, or they come in your house and they slip on your rug, or they're taking a shower in your shower and they fall through the shower door and cut their arms. That was very practical. You have a sliding glass door and they walk into it. See, these things happen consistently. Then you have covered. And if you have a dog, Then you almost have to have it, just about. A lot of laws now, they used to provide, that a dog was entitled, every dog was entitled to his first bite. That was an old adage. It really was. Because the only way they could sue for a dog bite is if the owner had knowledge of the dog's vicious propensities, were the words, you see. And he didn't have that knowledge until he bit somebody. So if you were the first guy he bit, you're out of luck. If you're the second guy, you could sue. But today they're doing away with that, and they usually provide that if the dog bites anybody or injures anybody, the person sometimes even absolutely liable. So if you have a dog, it's a good insurance to have again. Now, so have insurance and have adequate insurance. Now, the next subject we have, let's say, is accidents. So you've got to the point now, you're thinking about going out and driving, and you finally get in your car on the way out, and you start driving down the road. Now, if you have an accident, here's one thought that you want to go through your mind. How can I recoup my loss? See, don't belly up. Anything I hate to see is somebody who quits. One thing I feel in life is I'm never beat until I quit. That's the only time. So if you have a loss, if you are involved in an accident, think, how can I make myself financially whole? How can I recoup what I lost? When you think this way, here's a list of different items that just came to my mind that when somebody comes to me about an accident that I think about. First of all, credit card insurance. Like I find if I fly and I put it on my American Express credit card, I automatically have insurance. You see? So if somebody suffers a loss along that line, think, wait a minute, how did he fly? Did he fly? How did he fly? Did he charge it? And think about that. That's one possible means. If it's employment, if it occurred on the job, you have what you call workman's compensation. Or maybe the employer has some type of insurance to cover this type of accident. Think about that. Think about the union. Was a person a union member? Check with the union. Many times they have policies. Purchase at the airport. Another, suppose he has an airplane accident. Did he buy insurance at the airport? Now, if you fly at all, you fly a lot, remember, if you buy insurance there, to tell your wife, look, I fly. When I do fly, I go to one of these little machines, I buy insurance, I lick it, I put it in the envelope, and I drop it in the mail to you. Because if she gets it, she may just think, what's this thing? It's an advertisement. And throw it out. So tell her, so she's aware of it. Now, also there's rent-a-car insurance. If a person rents a car and there's an accident, think that on the little form, the person may have signed it saying, I want insurance coverage. Okay? So that's something that can be looked at. Again, you want to think, was there an accident? Person was in a rent-a-car. Maybe there was something wrong with that car. We have a serious accident that we're working on. And one thing we're going to do, fortunately, the car was kept intact. We're going to examine the car to find out whether or not there was some internal fault with that car so as to sue the car manufacturer. We're going to check the tire to see why the tire blew out. Maybe the tire was defective. There was also a piece of metal in the tire. We're checking the area to see if we can't bring in a subcontractor that was working on the highway, that perhaps he wrongfully left his metal there and didn't fix the area up and so on. So you want to be thinking of all these things. Think of credit purchases. Many times if you buy a car, you buy furniture, at the bank they will give you insurance that if somebody dies, then they will go ahead and pay off that particular credit purchase. On clubs, on-the-job injuries, that's where workman's compensation comes in. Again, as an attorney, the first thing we look for, if a person's injured on the job, you see, they just pay you so much according to a scale. You lose a finger up to this joint, they look at the scale, so much. You lose a finger down to this joint, so much. Is it a little finger, index finger, so on. Each one of these have a different value, depending upon if your arm is stiff afterwards. How far can you lift it? 40-degree disability, so much. But you see, that's not enough in some cases. So the thing we have to look for, and you want to be alert to look for, is how was the injury occurred? Did somebody else other than a workman on the job cause the injury? Like we had one case where there was a carpenter. He's on the job. He grabs one of these handsaws. Grabs it. The minute he grabs it, whoosh, all the electricity goes through him. He can't let go of the saw. Flips him off the building. He falls two floors. Get a very serious back injury. Now, you see, that saw belonged, let's say, to the contractor, the man he was working for. Hence, he couldn't sue him. All he got was workman's compensation. But we went back to the manufacturer of the saw, and that made a case out of it. The fact they had a defective cord some way so that this electricity would go right through the saw if there was a little bit of a short or something. So you see, you could then have a regular case to sue for full damages against the saw manufacturer. Now, I realize some of these things are technical. I only put them in your mind so like a red flag comes up, you see, when the trouble comes, and you don't sit back and do nothing. Now, there's also a medical on a car ordinarily. Again, regardless of who's at fault, if you have medical payments on the car, you can get paid immediately. No fault involved. They just say, if you're injured in the automobile, we will give you so much money, up to $5,000 or so on. This, again, is a very good thing to have. Now, also, did the person recently cancel their insurance? Now, this is something. I had a brother who died a few years back. He died of cancer. With my sister-in-law, they had just purchased a trailer down in Florida. Now, with this type of credit insurance, you see, it was the type that pays off in the event of death. Well, there, they were going to start to go ahead and say, oh, no, we're going to cancel this policy out because he had cancer, and under this particular clause, we got this clause and we got that clause. Well, you see, just with a little bit of pressure, even though they said they were going to cancel it out, we just didn't belly up, and as a consequence, with enough pressure, then when they paid off the trailer, a mobile home, so that my sister-in-law at least has that today, you see. So, again, keep these things in mind, these credit payments. Now you say, look, Helgi, what kind of a ripoff are you telling us about? See, because you can collect from all of these, every one of them, if you've got it. If you've got credit insurance, take your $100,000 there. If you've got employment, you get so much from that. If you've got a union policy, you'll get paid there. If it's that particular type of policy, you say, now, boy, that's kind of a ripoff, you know. Collect from three or four different. I collect on the medical insurance on the car. I collect from the other guy that hit us. You see? Now, is this a ripoff? No, it's not a ripoff. You see, it's like three life insurance policies. If you pay for a life insurance policy with Prudential and you pay for a life insurance policy with Occidental and the person dies, you don't say, well, Prudential, you just give me the money. Occidental, I can't take it from you because I collected over here. No, you got different policies. You got different rights. That's what you're paying for. Somebody paid a premium for that. The insurance company isn't giving it to you free. Somebody paid a premium. So you're entitled, you see? If you got 10 different policies, 10 different sources of collection, you've got a right to collect on all 10. It's not a ripoff. It's like a slot machine. You're paying the premiums, right? You're putting the money in. When the money comes out the bottom of the slot machine, you don't say, well, I really didn't earn it. See? If you're going to feel that way, don't buy all the insurance. So just keep some of these things in mind. Now, suppose we have an accident in which you're involved. Now, the first thing I want to advise here is don't admit you're at fault. Don't admit you're at fault. It's an inclination, especially for people who are religiously oriented. Oh, I'm awfully sorry. It was really all my fault. I want to apologize for it. Because what's going to happen is, you see, when you get to court, you're going to go ahead and you're going to eat that statement. Because they're going to have you on a stand. And they're going to have the other man say, did he get out of the car? What did he say to you at the time? He said, I'm sorry, I was at fault. Thank you. And that goes to the jury, and that's evidence of the fact that you were negligent. Now, again, is this shady? Is this sneaky? No. The reason being, you don't know if you were at fault. You don't know. You see, there are many facts that you don't have in mind, that you were not aware of at the time. Maybe that fellow was speeding. Maybe he was drunk. You don't know. Maybe somebody knows he was looking the other way. You see, totally negligent. And you don't know what the law is. The law may say under these circumstances, sure, you may be a little bit at fault, but he was more at fault, and hence he's the one responsible. So don't say these things. Don't say, I'm not hurt. You say, well, ghastly, I sure know if I'm hurt. Well, I mean, if you have two broken legs, you're going to know it. But on the other hand, if you have a whiplash, you may not know it. You may go home, pardon me, especially if you get hit in the back of the automobile, your neck snaps back, and you don't feel anything. You know, you're nervous, you're upset, things are going on, you're tense, and maybe not until maybe 3 weeks later, you find, you know, I just can't sleep nights. I'm waking up. I got a pain in my back of my neck, maybe a pain in the back, maybe a pain in the bottom of the leg, and you don't relate it to the accident, what you call a whiplash injury. So don't say you're not hurt, because these injuries can occur later. They can come up later. And again, if you say I'm not hurt, they're going to use that against you when you do try to collect. They're going to say, here's what you said, and the chances are your injury occurred elsewhere, and you're just trying to go ahead and fleece us. Now, again, in an accident, one thing you want to do is you want to look for witnesses. Witnesses are urgently important. Now, I know you feel gassy. I hate to walk up and have somebody say, can I have your name? Did you see the accident? Or so on. I know there's a natural reluctance to do that, but steel yourself to it and do it, because your whole case might hinge upon somebody that's sitting there or standing around. See, otherwise, you go to court and you played a game we all played when we were kids, red light, green light. The other side gets up, judge says, yes, what happened? As I was driving down the street, the light was green, and went through the green light, and this guy plowed into me. You get up and say, Your Honor, that's not right. I was going down the street, the light was green, I went through the light, and bang, this guy hit me. See? And well, how can the judge decide? I mean, how can he know with you saying red light, and he says red light, or green light? You see, there's no real way for him to know. You give it to a jury, the jury flips a coin. You see? So, but if you have one witness, it's going to make your whole case. You see, and if you're talking a serious injury, you could be talking many, many dollars. It's like one case we had in Chicago. I'll just never forget it. This fellow was driving down the street, and Chicago is a totally political town. I mean, it's all political. The first thing you do when you get a case in Chicago, you say, who's the judge? Who's the guy on the other side? And have you heard anything about those fellows being together, you see? So here's an accident where a fellow's driving down the street, our client, and he hits a police car. And of all the things you don't want to hit in Chicago is a police car. They racked him up, they put him in the tank and everything else, and they had him charged with about every crime in the book. And now I forget how it occurred. He says they were pulling out, and they said they were standing there, and he hit them while they were standing there or something else. I mean, the facts were totally repugnant, see? Somebody was lying. Somebody was lying. So it finally came to, we came to the trial, and we said, well, look, and see, I knew when I first walked in the court, the minute I walked in, somebody pointed to me, and I knew that the police officers were down there, you see, because the officers immediately got the prosecutor and pointed to me, that's the guy representing this fellow. Said, okay, like, don't worry about it. We're going to help you out here. So they prosecuted very diligently the case. And here are these two conflicting stories, absolute conflicting. And, I mean, this is getting to be a big deal in the court here because we said, where are the pictures? Judge, there was somebody out there taking pictures from this police department. Where are they? Say, well, Judge, we don't have them. See, they look very phony, see. So everything's really getting to be a crescendo, but we had an ace in the hole. What happened when we investigated that case? We found some kid, you know, 18, 19 years old, that was sitting up in a second-story window and happened to be looking out and saw that whole thing. So we put him on the stand, and you see, that just changed the whole complexion of that case. Because he was right there, an unbiased witness, and I tell you, he really laid him low. The interesting part of it is that, I forget now who was supposed to be drunk or even, it happened so long ago, but they asked the kid. They said, now look, was this fellow drunk? Or our client, that's right, the police said he had him charged our client with drunken driving. And he said, look, was our client drunk? The kid said, no, he wasn't drunk at all. I don't care what these policemen say about him staggering or something else, he was not drunk. So the prosecutor gets up there with a big deal. How old are you? You know, 18, 19, sir. How many times have you been drunk? Well, I've never been drunk. Then how can you know this man here was drunk? And the kid says, I'll tell you why. He said, because my father was an alcoholic all my life. He said, and I saw him come home. It brings a lump into my throat to this day when I tell that story, because I tell you, the whole courtroom just went hush, you see, because it really was a crescendo down there. So the court just threw the case out. But I wanted to bring home the importance of a witness to you there. Now, also, get pictures. Now, I realize you don't carry a camera, and if you do carry a camera, get pictures. Because that's going to tell many times how the accident occurred. Who hit whom, or who hit who, whichever way it is. because these things, when the time comes up, the facts are going to change. You won't even recognize them. When the other fellow comes up and tells his story, when the case comes to trial 3 years later. So get pictures. Get pictures of the front of the car. Get pictures of the sides of the car so you can tell exactly where the impact took place. Get pictures at the scene. If you got somebody in the hospital, get pictures of those people at the hospital. See, these things are all going to mean money to you. Get pictures later of bruises, of things like that. Now, again, be on the alert that if you see somebody taking pictures, because many times fellows will be kind of their own entrepreneurs. Accidents happen. They will come out and take the pictures. They will keep them. They'll pass out their cards. So the attorney will contact them and pay for these pictures. So if you see anybody taking them, you want to keep that in mind. Get the man's card if he's got one, or get his name if somebody's around taking pictures. Now, these pictures not only help you win your case, but they literally mean money. Literally. You see, what you want to get is the type of picture, what they call the, quote, oh, my God picture. You know, close up. When you see something, you go, oh, my God. See? That's the type of thing that you want to give to the jury in these cases. Because you can never, in a million years, explain some of these things verbally to a jury and get the point across. We just had one case where a fellow was on a motorcycle and hit somebody. I tell you, somebody took pictures there like I just explained. And his whole hip, if you just see the hip, the whole hip was turned sideways. He's on his back, and his hip is turned virtually sideways. You see, that made a big difference in settling that case with the insurance company.